Tuesday, November 3rd, Election Day in America. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, the long-fought battle for the White House reaches Election Day, but it's not clear when Americans will actually know the final results.
As long as the states have gotten all of their ballots counted by December 14th, that's the relevant date that determines what electors are going to be casting ballots in the election.
A massive police investigation following an attack in Vienna, Austria that involved six crime scenes.
It's almost a sort of ghostly atmosphere in the city.
Also ahead, how K-pop music is helping the anti-government youth movement in Thailand. It's all on today's International Edition. After months of campaigning in a long and bitter race for the White House, President Donald Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden's fate is in the hands of American voters. Trump has been trailing Biden in national opinion polls, but the race is seen as close enough in swing states that Trump could still piece together the 270 votes needed to prevail in the state-by-state electoral college that determines the winner. Both candidates made their final appeals in multiple states on Monday that will be among the most important in determining the outcome in the election. The VOA's Jason Patinkin spoke to our correspondent Esha Sarai, who's in the very important state of Pennsylvania, where Trump and Biden spent time on Monday.
Pennsylvania carries 20 electoral votes and really historically has a strong reputation of being a swing state. So in 2016, Pennsylvania went for Trump at a very narrow margin, less than 1%. And now Joe Biden is polling pretty strongly in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, but Trump still maintains a lot of support in the rural parts of Pennsylvania. We imagine it's going to be as close a race or, you know, similarly close as it was in 2016.
And because of that, both candidates have been visiting the states quite a bit. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely. So Joe Biden held two events in Philadelphia over the weekend, and President Trump had four outside of Philadelphia and in a few more rural counties. So both of them are really spending a lot of time in this state. But in addition to these candidate appearances, the rhetoric around going to vote, the importance of going to vote, is so prevalent in Pennsylvania. We're seeing planes and helicopters flying banners that say vote with websites on information on your polling places. The billboards are everywhere. It's really clear that this is a state that both parties are concerned about winning.
Now, you've talked to a number of voters in Philadelphia, which is Pennsylvania's biggest city, followed by Pittsburgh. Can you share what have these voters been telling you?
Absolutely. A lot of voters in Philadelphia will say that this is a reliably Democratic or blue city. Whether that's true is going to be seen when results start coming in this week. You know, I had a voter tell me yesterday that if there was full voter turnout in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, then he says, you know, the Democrats wouldn't have to worry about what was happening in between the two cities. That being said, there were reports of a lot of Trump supporters with flags appearing at some of Joe Biden's appearances in Philadelphia. So the city itself is you know, not as clear cut as I think Democrats might like it to be.
And let's look at the issues. What are the issues that voters are most concerned about that you've spoken to?
Sure. I think that the COVID-19 pandemic is really at the forefront of everyone's mind across the country, and Pennsylvania is absolutely no exceptions. Pennsylvania is one of the many states that's seen an uptick in cases and hospitalizations over the past week. And so the pandemic and handling of the pandemic has been something that both candidates have talked about a lot in their appearances, and it's something that voters are saying is really driving them to the polls.
Last of all, earlier last week, Philadelphia saw some significant protests following the killing by police of a black man, Walter Wallace Jr. Any updates in that situation?
Absolutely. I think that the timing of these protests is really something to take note of. You know, over the past two weekends, weather has been really bad, and that certainly that rain has quelled protests a little bit. In addition to that, the family of Walter Wallace has said that they will not be pursuing murder charges against the police because they believe that it's the system of policing that has failed them and didn't adequately prepare them to deal with the situation. That being said, police have also refused to release to the public body cam footage from the incident until Wednesday after the election. So though things have been a little bit quiet in terms of protests over the past week, we're expecting to see some movement depending on what is released by the police on Wednesday.
VOA correspondent Esha Sarai speaking with colleague Jason Patinkin. In Pennsylvania. Well, after a furious final day of campaigning to multiple states Monday, President Trump had planned to be at his Washington, D.C. hotel tonight, but has instead decided to be at the White House as he watches the results. Joe Biden will be in his hometown of Wilmington, Delaware. VOA correspondent Carolyn Pursuti is there and joins us for details.
Lori, I'm standing in front of a stage in an enormous parking lot, and this is where Joe Biden will step out with his wife after the election. It is covered with red, white, and blue lighting. Red, white, and blue lighting goes up the sides of the buildings, and even in the individual windows in this building are red, white, and blue lights, one on each floor, one red floor, one white floor, one blue floor. It is decked out in stars and patriotic colors. I asked the Biden campaign, will he come out if he doesn't win? And they said, we're not sure what's going to happen election night, but whenever the election is called, he will be walking out on that stage. And I said, what if it's not called on election night? And they said, well, there are many questions about election night, so we're not sure. We're just going to have to wing it. Now, the Biden campaign has said all along that he will come out on election night, so we are hoping that this stage is where we will see him. And of course, he put in a full day of campaigning the day before the election, as did President Trump. The real question is, what is the margin between the two after the votes are counted? If it's large enough, then we will have a winner. If it is tight, we probably won't have a winner on election night. It will extend into the rest of the week.
Knowing that, and in the middle of a pandemic, the Biden campaign has handled its campaign much differently than the president has. He's been doing these sort of parking lot car rallies so people can stay in their cars. Are people still invited to come out tonight and celebrate or to be with Biden or to hear from him? Or is it just basically sort of a stage set for just a very few people? What do you know about that?
Good question. We're not really sure about that yet. I can tell you by what I'm seeing, there are not seats set up here. I would think that the TV cameras that are set up, including ours, will be broadcasting this event to the world. And it will be chilly, so that may be another reason why if you have any supporters here, they're going to be very hearty supporters because it will be 37 degrees Fahrenheit, which is 3 degrees Celsius tonight when he decides to come out on the stage. But again, we're not sure when that will be. It will be whenever the election is called. If it's not called, he still may come out and say, hey, thank you so much for your support. We'll wait and we'll go to bed and we'll see what happens tomorrow. I can only tell you that security is extremely tight. There are concrete barriers all around this parking lot. There are barricades to stop you from coming in. You must have credentials to even get in the parking lot, not with a vehicle at all, just on foot. And you know, you have to step back and think, well, it's because they may be hosting a president here. You know, we'll find out once the election polls close, when the election results are in.
You have been in Delaware checking out polling stations, talking to voters. What are you hearing? What are they telling you?
In Delaware, no one can vote until election day. So when I talked to several voters, they were actually delivering their absentee ballot. And one person said that she came to deliver it just because she ran out of time and she was going out of town on election day. So she wanted to deliver it in person. And then the second person said, I expect it to be very crowded. If not for the coronavirus, I would definitely stand in line on election day. Third person I talked to said, I am definitely going in person to vote today on election day because I want to bring my children, ages 9 and 12, to see democracy in action. So that mom says, I don't care how long the lines are, I will wait in line and I will vote in person.
VOA correspondent Carolyn Pursuti, thanks so much. Today's U.S. presidential election has the potential for a drawn-out legal battle with the pandemic, changing the ways in which people can vote, and an unprecedented number of mail-in ballots. President Trump, for months, has threatened to take the results to courts, and a number of states have already been fighting battles over ballots. Joining us is University of California Hastings School of Law constitutional law professor Joel Paul. Thanks so much for being with us. So in Texas, the state Supreme Court on Monday ruled 127,000 votes that have already been cast at drive-through voting sites in a Democratic-leaning area area that they must be counted following a Republican challenge that the drive-through voting alternative after Republicans challenged the drive-through voting alternative and one of the votes disqualified. So is that the end of this?
Well, the Texas Supreme Court held against the Republican petition, and so the Republicans in Texas are likely to appeal that up to the U.S. Supreme Court. The issue behind this case and the other cases that have been brought up to the Supreme Court is basically that the Constitution provides that the state legislature has the authority to decide how to select the electors for the Electoral College. And the Supreme Court in the Bush versus Gore case had decided that this meant literally that state Supreme Courts or other courts did not have authority to vary the legislative scheme. So the issue in the Texas case, like the issues in the Wisconsin case and the Pennsylvania and North Carolina case, is to what extent the courts can allow some sort of variance to accommodate voters during the pandemic.
There have been a lot of Republicans and the president himself talking about the mail-in ballots and that even if they come in on Election Day, if they're not counted by Election Day, that they shouldn't be accepted. This is one of the big issues as well surrounding some of the potential legal battles we may see. This pretty much ties into all of it, doesn't it? And what do you say about that?
The Supreme Court has seemingly taken an inconsistent position. On the one hand, in the case of Wisconsin, where a federal court in Wisconsin decided to extend the deadline for the receipt of absentee ballots that were mailed prior to the election but weren't received until after the election, the Supreme Court rejected that. They did not allow Wisconsin to do that. On the other hand, they have allowed both Pennsylvania and North Carolina to extend the deadline for the receipt of mail-in ballots that are postmarked prior to the election. So it's not really at all clear what the court is doing in these cases. And in each of these cases, the court hasn't issued an opinion. So we don't really know what the court thinks or what distinction they're drawing among these cases.
Another thing that has raised a little bit of alarm, we're hearing the president talking about that it doesn't seem fair if the election decision is not made on election night and that there could be a potential for a candidate to claim victory even if they don't have quite enough of the delegate votes yet to call the election.
There's no significance under our Constitution to election night. Historically, elections were not held on a single day. They were held over a period of months. And the only date that really matters is a Monday, December 14. That's the day on which the electors each vote in separate states. So as long as the states have gotten all of their ballots counted by December 14, that's the relevant date that determines what electors are going to be casting ballots in the election. And as far as the president goes, though the president may not be willing to accept that outcome, it really doesn't matter because the electors' votes will be counted by Congress on January 6th, and the new president will be sworn in on January 20, according to the Constitution.
UC Hastings Professor of Constitutional Law, Joel Paul, thank you so much. While Americans and the world watch the U.S. presidential race, the success or failure of the next president's agenda rests on just a handful of Senate races nationwide that polls show are tightening. Joining us now to understand more about these critical Senate races is VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson. Catherine, so a president really does need his party.
Absolutely. You know, we have a handful of incredibly competitive races nationwide that are going to determine if Democrats can retake control of the majority in the U.S. Senate and really make the case as to whether a reelected President Donald Trump could have a successful second term in office, or if the newly inaugurated President Joe Biden would be able to get his ambitious legislative agenda done. So really, while the occupant of the White House does matter a great deal, who is in control of the U.S. Senate on Capitol Hill also matters a great deal. And it really comes down to a handful of states, Iowa, South Carolina, Georgia, Maine, these places where voters have some choices about going with senators who have aligned their fortunes with Donald Trump or going with their Democratic challengers.
How are the polls looking? Are there some of those states that you mentioned? Are polls leaning either way or are all the races very close and hard to really predict at this point?
Well, there are some really great organizations here in the United States, nonpartisan organizations that take a look at the polling, that take a look at the situation on the ground, and have this determination where they call them so-called toss-up states, which means that the polling is so close, they can't really determine if the voters there are leaning Republican or leaning Democrat. And so some of those handful of states, Iowa, South Carolina, Maine, Georgia, those are the so-called toss-up states where the polling points are within a couple percentage points and it's really too close to call. So it'll really come down to when voters go into the voting booth and they make that determination about President Trump or Vice President Biden. How do they feel about voting Republican or Democrat all the way down the ticket? That may be a lot of what makes the determination there.
VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson, thanks so much. Austrian police are ordering people to stay indoors in central Vienna after a potentially coordinated attack on Monday night that involved six crime scenes. There are fatalities and injuries. Local media reported that a synagogue had been attacked, but it's not clear if the synagogue was actually the target or it was just nearby. Joining us from Vienna is reporter Chris Cummins. Chris, I understand this is a pretty fluid situation. What can you tell us so far?
Okay, well, what we have confirmed by the Vienna police is that at 8 p.m. local time, several shots were fired in the inner city of Vienna, beginning at the Seitenstettengasse, which is the area where a large synagogue is. Several suspects apparently were involved, armed with rifles, and there were six different locations across that inner city area where there were incidents. We've heard a report of one of the attackers being killed, one passerby being killed, and one police officer being severely injured. That's the information we have at the moment.
We are also hearing reports that Jewish communities are being warned that are in central Vienna not to leave their homes. Have you heard anything about that?
Oh, it's not just the Jewish community. There's a very dramatic atmosphere in the central district. The inner city, the core of the town, has been cordoned off by the largest police operation in living memory here in Vienna. People are being told to get inside if they're in, for example, a restaurant or a bar which opened for the last night tonight before a national lockdown begins at midnight. They're told to leave the areas outside the bars and go inside the building and then not leave again. So a lot of people are trapped inside buildings in the first district, not able to go home. It was a night when people were trying to use the last of the freedom of, if you like, of the last day before a lockdown sets in here in Austria. So it was quite busy in town, and the police are saying, stay where you are, stay in your houses, not just the Jewish community, but every community in Austria. It's a very fluid situation.
We initially heard that this was an attack targeting a synagogue. Do police have any indication as to who is responsible and if it was, in fact, targeting a specific community?
No, the alarm bells went off with the name of the street where the shots were first heard, Seitenstettengasse, because that is where a large synagogue is placed, is situated in Vienna. The Jewish community say that synagogue was closed at the time and there were no injuries inside the synagogue. You know, the doors were locked. But of course, because of that area of town, people have made links to perhaps that being a possible background. It's impossible to confirm who the attackers are and who, if anyone specifically, they were attacking. All we know is that the Interior Ministry has called this now a terror attack in Vienna. That would be the first time we've had a terror attack in Vienna in four decades.
What is the scene like right now?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, people have been told to stay inside. So it's almost a sort of ghostly atmosphere in the city. You'll see a lot of blue sirens flashing, blue lights flashing, sirens going off. If people try and go inside this cordoned off area, they're told to put their hands in the air. Journalists on site are reporting that the police seem quite nervous. It does seem that one officer has already been severely injured. It's obviously a very dramatic situation, and that there have been rumors that one of the attackers had a suicide vest on. So people have been told to, you know, get their hands away and from their midriffs and show them where they are if they stray into this area. At the moment, the police are cordoning off the area. And as I say, the investigation is ongoing, a massive police operation.
Reporter Chris Cummins in Vienna, Austria. You're listening to International Edition. Back in a minute.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
They're still trying to figure out what are the specific policies from the White House.
VOA Asia, your daily digest of top Asia stories.
Beijing has especially hazardous levels of air pollution.
Blending American and Asian perspectives.
China is protecting wildlife.
Original reports and series, education, health, technology. Stories that mean something to your daily life. VOA Asia.
VOA's International Edition continues.
Millions of Americans across the U.S. have been preparing for Election Day, as have businesses. Fears of post-election unrest have prompted offices and shops in Washington, D.C. to take extra precautions in case the city sees post-election violence. Africa 54's Ayan Bohr has more.
The White House Deli, a small sandwich shop just steps from the White House, knows what it's like to be near the epicenter of violent protest in the nation's capital. Ernesto, a staff member at the deli, bore witness to protests that occurred earlier this year.
First thing that we're doing right now, we're trying to close like at the big window, because when happened the first protest about when Floyd passed away. So they broke the window, right?
The deli endured physical property damage when protesters used rocks to shatter the shop's windows. Ernesto says they kept those rocks as a reminder of the protest that shook his work neighborhood in nearby Lafayette Square following the death of George Floyd, an unarmed black man who died earlier this year while in police custody in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Since then, protest and counter-protest have erupted across America, including these recent days leading up to the election. In the eastern state of North Carolina, participants of the I Am Change rally were pepper-sprayed and some were arrested by police in the city of Graham on Saturday. A statement released by police says officers responded with force when the group failed to disperse from a road. But marchers say they obtained permits and had a right to march on the streets. In the eastern state of North Carolina, participants of the I Am Change rally were pepper sprayed and some were arrested by police in the city of Graham on Saturday. A statement released by police says officers responded with force when the group failed to disperse from a road, but marchers say they obtained permits and had a right to march on the streets. According to U.S. media reports, pro-Trump supporters clashed with a group of people in Richmond, Virginia, over the weekend. The Richmond Police Department said on Facebook that confrontations arose when a mobile Trump rally entered the city on Sunday. Another incident involving a Joe Biden campaign bus is now under federal investigation after motorists with pro-Trump signs surrounded the bus on a Texas highway, a move seen as an intimidation tactic by Biden supporters. Biden, the Democratic presidential candidate, and his running mate, Kamala Harris, were not on board. President Donald Trump defended the motorist and dismissed those allegations in a Twitter post. Incidents like these are raising concerns that tensions might boil over after the election, prompting business owners to take extra measures to protect their property. Many are boarding up, putting up plywood panels on their windows to protect them from damage. Nitish is the manager of A1 Wines and Liquor.
We are just taking safety precautions because we did get hit last time, and it was almost like two times we got hit. And so at this point, we just don't want to take any chance on getting, you know, something like a destruction.
While employees are planning for the worst, some say violence could complicate an already difficult year.
Like, I feel scared because the situation is, like, it's very difficult. Because, you know, we stopped to work like for almost 6 months with the pandemic. So we are scared like of being on the home again, like for almost 2 weeks again.
For now, Ernesto says his team is monitoring developments around the Capitol and hopes it remains calm. With Jason Patinkin, I'm Ayen Dangbior for VOA News, Washington.
Tired of the conventional tools of protests, many young Thais are turning to K-pop to express themselves politically during the ongoing anti-government demonstrations in that country. What started with a handful of young K-pop fans dancing in the street during a protest has now grown, attracting the attention of more prominent Thai dance troupes and becoming a potent political force in Thailand's anti-government movement. You've been listening to International Edition. That's it for our show today, but you can always find us at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Jackson Vungani, I'm Lori London in Washington. Thanks so much for listening and have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States continues to push back on Chinese communist propaganda. Most recently, the State Department designated the U.S. operations of six China-based media companies as foreign missions, said Secretary of State Mike Pompeo.
They are all substantially owned or effectively controlled by a foreign government. We simply want to ensure that American people, consumers of information, can differentiate between news written by a free press and propaganda distributed by the Chinese Communist Party itself. They're not the same thing.
These six entities designated under the Foreign Missions Act include UK Global, Zhifangzhu Daily, Xinmen Evening News, Social Sciences and China Press, Beijing Review, and Economic Daily as foreign missions. Over the past decade, and particularly under General Secretary Xi Jinping's tenure, the Chinese Communist Party, or CCP, has asserted greater control over China's state-backed propaganda outlets. General Secretary Xi himself has stated, party-owned media must embody the party's will, safeguard the party's authority. Their actions must be highly consistent with the party. While free media around the world are beholden to the truth, PRC media are beholden to the CCP, said State Department spokesperson Morgan Ortegas in a statement. The decision to designate these six entities does not place any restrictions on what these organizations may publish in the United States. It simply recognizes them for what they are, PRC-controlled propaganda outlets. This action follows the June 22nd designation of China Central Television, China News Service, the People's Daily, and the Global Times, and the February 18th designation of Xinhua News Agency, China Global Television Network, China Radio International, China Daily Distribution Corporation, and Haitian Development USA. Entities designated as foreign missions must adhere to certain requirements that increase transparency relating to their associated governments' media activities in the United States. Our goal is to protect the freedom of the press in the United States and ensure the American people know whether their news is coming from the free press or from a malign foreign government, said spokesperson Ortegas. Transparency isn't threatening to those who value truth.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.